basically your own fault that you died because you were a sex worker, right? And even if we're saying, no, it's not, you know, it's X, Y, it's the murderer's fault, it's the perpetrator's fault, we're still, you know, I see women show up to vigils and do a whole bunch of, like, really nice things and talk all this stuff, and then I simultaneously see them judge and shun sex workers on the street, and I that's so disgusting for me to witness, like.
Every century, our eyes on the universe have been opened anew. We are witness to the very brink of time and space.
We must ask ourselves, we were so proud of our accomplishments. What is our place in the cosmic perspective of life? The cosmic perspective of
life. The exploration of the cosmos is a voyage of self-discovery. As long as there have been humans, we have searched for our place in the cosmos.
Are there things about the universe that will be forever beyond our grasp? Are there things about the universe that are ungraspable?
One of the great revelations of space exploration is the image of the Earth, finite and lonely, bearing the entire human species through the oceans of space and time.
Matter flows from place to place and momentarily comes together to be you. Some people find that thought disturbing. I find the reality thrilling.
As the ancient mythmakers knew, children equally of the earth, the sky. In our tenure on this planet, we've accumulated dangerous evolutionary baggage. We've also acquired passion for others, love for our children, and a great, soaring, passionate intelligence, the clear tools for our continued survival.
We must ask ourselves, we were so proud of our accomplishments. What is our place in the cosmic perspective?
Hello and welcome to Radio Free Thinker, a radio show podcast that promotes skepticism and critical thinking, right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. My name is Ethan, your free thinking historian.
And I'm Daniel, the skeptical economics student.
And I'm Rob, cognitive psychologist, and happy that it is the first show of the new year.
Hooray!
Happy decade, everybody.
Yay!
So how was you guys' new year? Exciting?
Pretty good. Went out to the Wolf and Hound, had some pub food, and stuck around in my apartment, played board games, video games.
Whoa, calm down, Rob.
Oh, yeah, I know. Crazy. Actually, I think we were playing the new Super Mario Brothers Wii, and like midnight passed, and you're like, oh, hey, everybody, Happy New Year. Shit, I fell down a hole again.
I watched Doctor Who.
Good stuff. No spoilers.
Okay, well... That's what I was going to talk about, but all right. Well, speaking of doctors, actually,
very good segue.
Yes. We have some interesting news for our listeners. Perhaps you've heard of Dr. Paul Offit. And if you listen to this show, you should have, because I talk about him often.
Well, can you just go over who he is again quickly?
Sure thing, Daniel.
A little recap.
So, not for me, of course. But
right. Yeah, you know who he is, yeah. Well, Dr. Offit wrote a really great book called Autism's False Prophets, and he's basically been on the front lines of combating the anti-vax movement. He has pretty much completely debunked the notion that vaccines cause autism. Because of that, he's basically become a pariah to that community. He's been the subject of nasty emails, threatening letters, and legal battles. And recently, he's been sued again. And this time, it's by Barbara Lowe Fisher, who is the founder of the National Vaccine Information Center. It may sound scientific, but it's actually a front to basically promote anti-vax material. And this person, Fisher, has taken offense to an article that was written in Wired magazine, written by journalist Amy Wallace. And both Paul Offit Amy Wallace, and Wired Magazine have been named in this libel case.
I think we actually talked about the Amy Wallace article a couple weeks ago, maybe a couple months ago. She basically wrote a massive article in Wired on the anti-vax movement, and it was very critical of them. And she started receiving really nasty comments about it, and some were sexist, and there was a whole kerfuffle about it.
Yeah. I mean, it just kind of goes to show you the mentality of the anti-vax movement. This is how they deal with criticism. We insult and torment people who disagree with us.
So what exactly are they claiming is libel here?
Well, interesting you ask. I took a quote from the PDF of the actual suit, and you can find that on our show notes. We'll have all the links for this. The actual quote, I'm going to read it to you, is Wallace writing, and she's asking Offit to describe this Fisher, the person who runs the National Vaccine Information Center. And this is what is written. Fisher, who has long been the media's go-to interview for what some in the autism arena call parents' rights, makes him particularly nuts, and him is off it here. As in, you just want to scream. The reason? She lies, he says flatly. That she lies is what they're saying is the libel here. So obviously, very close parallels to Simon Singh, who is being sued by the British Chiropractors Association for saying they're bogus.
And numerous other scientists who are being sued for libel.
It's a ridiculous system we have where scientists are being sued for doing science. Absolutely unacceptable.
That's why this whole movement with Sense About Science got started, keep libel laws out of science.
Exactly.
Well, I think you can make some sort of argument here that because it was in sort of more of a popular magazine and not so much a science journal, that it can be sort of taken as libel just as any other article would be.
I can understand if Wallace wrote something that was, you know, saying, oh, Fisher is a complete idiot and, you know, eats babies, which ironically is what the anti-vax movement is saying about Dr. Offit, but nobody seems to bat an eyelash at
that. Yeah, they created a badly Photoshopped picture with Amy Wallace, Paul Offit,
Dr. Novello.
A bunch of people eating babies in this sort of satanic vision of science, and it was absolutely ridiculous. I mean, if anyone should be being sued here,
it's them.
It's them for basically saying that these people eat babies.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with Daniel. I mean, there are limits, obviously. But I think to basically abuse the legal system to silence your critics,
I think that's what's going on here. It's not that they're worried about losing their reputation.
They lost their reputation a long time ago.
They're trying to quash critics.
Yeah.
Well, if they do have no case, as I would take a guess at, they can be countersued for it, and they can Wired Magazine and Dr. Offit and the journalist who I forget the name of. They could countersue and probably like take some money in damages from them.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I'm hoping will happen. You know, obviously this is going to be expensive and it's going to be emotionally draining. I mean, the anti-vax movement is known for being offensive, and, you know, they will send threatening letters. They will make your life miserable, right? So I wouldn't blame any of them if they wanted to just get this problem away. If they do decide to fight it, though, I really hope the skeptical community rallies around them like they have with Simon Singh and try to make a difference out of this. I mean, this could be the turning point in this battle with the pseudoscience. I mean, this could turn out to be the Dover of the anti-vax movement. You know, Dover referring to
Dover, Pennsylvania,
where the
intelligent design was completely destroyed by court.
Yeah. Excellent case. You can actually see a Nova documentary on that.
Good documentary.
Very good. So, I mean, this really has the potential to backfire on the anti-vaxxers. Again, it remains to be seen if that's going to happen or not. But, you know, I hope it does. I'm sure that most of us do. And
I mean, really, no matter what goes on, it's raising really interesting questions about, you know, what counts as libel and whether the sort of the evidence that science comes up with can be considered damaging to someone's reputation, even though it is, in fact, the truth.
Yeah.
Well, I think it more comes down to the fact that he outright came out and called her a liar
If she wrote things on her website that weren't true, then...
But I'm saying...
Well, he has to prove, though, that she wasn't just...
intended to lie.
And, like, doesn't know the information. But, I mean, I think with the anti-vax movement, is getting to that point, though, where you are seeing them kind of grasping at straws. I mean, it's been demolished by all the evidence. You know, back, you know, what, 10 years ago when this whole thing started with the MMR thing, there was legitimate research. People were concerned. And they said, oh, wait, there's no legitimacy to this argument.
Yeah, there's actually just been a couple of studies published recently. One that I just read about in today's Vancouver Sun, I think. Another study that completely demolishes any link between MMR and autism.
Yeah. I mean, that one's been crushed for a while, too. Never mind the sort of, you know, nefarious, weird stuff that was going on with Andrew Wakefield with his all that money he received from defense attorneys who wanted to sue drug companies. I mean, if you never mind that conflict of interest, even his argument was disproven quite thoroughly, too, right? So it is an interesting situation. I am kind of hoping that this will go to court. I would like to see how... you know, American libel laws stack up.
No, they seem like they would be better than the British ones, where it's sort of all the onus is on the person who's accused to disprove it.
But it would be interesting to see, because, I mean, we do have this interesting battle of Simon Singh going on.
Yeah.
I mean, I would like to see how they compare.
Mm-hmm. Well, in the U.S. system, just like the Canadian system, I believe what it basically comes down to is there isn't really an onus on either side. It's just whoever... has a even slightly more compelling argument wins in civil cases like this. So all that they really have to show is that there's at least good evidence that the person is lying, and they should get off easily with this. So hopefully that's what happens. Or
and I mean, they're going up against Wired magazine. There's probably going to be pretty good team of lawyers involved.
Yeah. I mean, the only concern I have is that Wired is going to back off from the bad publicity. But I hope they stick to their journalists and they stick to Paul Offit, because, I mean, Paul Offit
They backed up Amy Wallace when she started getting flack from when she originally published the article.
Yeah. Again, though, what she was getting, though, was by no means...
legal threats.
Well, yeah. I mean, she was basically being dragged through the mud by a bunch of... you know, jerks, just, you know, insulting her, making sexist remarks. I mean, that's unacceptable regardless. Now they're calling into question her journalistic integrity. So it's going to be interesting to see. And I hope that things work out for them. And I hope the community, again, rallies around them. This is going to be great if, you know, things go our way. If not, then it could be a disaster. So,
well, we'll see.
Yeah. Well, why don't we go to a commercial break? When we come back, we'll be hearing from our good pal Don, who's got a Head of a Curve segment for us.
Hey, man, this is Big J Magneto. Man, if you want to hear all the great sounds, you got to listen to this cat, man, because this is, you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, the greatest sound.
And this is Dawn reporting from Brandon, Manitoba, with another segment of Ahead of the Curve.
Stay above the flat line. I'm ahead of the curve. Take a piece of the sunshine with me on a red eye flight to another world. It isn't any trouble if you want to come with me. Stay above the flat line. I'm ahead of the curve.
In this segment of Ahead of the Curve, I'm going to explore a show that I discovered over the holidays called Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura on True TV. Jesse Ventura, for those who don't know, used to be a professional wrestler, apparently was a Marine at one time, famous for an acting career, starring alongside of the likes of Arnold Schwarzenegger. Then, in an odd turn, became governor of Minnesota, where he was known as somewhat of a progressive, disappeared for a while, but has come back to do this TV show. The premise of the show, Jesse and a team of skeptic science investigators look at various conspiracy theories. Now, they have covered a few of the biggies so far. There's only been about 7 episodes, and of those, only 5 have been broadcast. They cover things like 9/11, global warming. They have a future one coming up on Apocalypse 2012. The one I reviewed was the first one in the series on HAARP, H-A-A-R-P. That's the High Frequency Active Aurora Research Program that's going on in Alaska by the American government and military. I'm not going to be looking at HAARP itself or the conspiracies about it, but about the show and how it performs its investigations and whether it's something skeptics should be looking forward to or something they should fear as feeding the hysteria that is already out there. The first thing I noticed when watching the show was its over-the-top drama. It starts off by saying, HAARP, is it a death weapon? Will it destroy the Earth? Is it part of some great conspiracy that can control your mind? They begin with a bit of the history, which is a little weak and a little loose, but they say it was somehow started by Big Oil. Then they go on to say that the government got interested in it and became part of the Star Wars program and for communications with deep submersible subs, part of the whole Cold War arms buildup. And then they go in and they drop in this thing about how it can be used for human mind control. And they mention this, they repeatedly hit this one button a lot during the show, but brought very little evidence for it. In fact, the only evidence they do bring to show that mind control is real is it's their explanation as to why so many conscripted, mistreated, ill-fed Iraqi soldiers gave up during the first Iraqi war. They said at that point they were using the HAARP technology on the battlefield. Now, of course, one must wonder if they had this technology for the first Iraq war, why they haven't used it since, especially in such places as, Iraq 2, Afghanistan. There were numerous areas that if they really had this technology to do this quote-unquote mind control, they would have used it. But no, they kept hitting that button. The images they used were of clinical studies that had nothing to do with HAARP, had nothing to do, I think, even with mind control. I'm not sure where the graphics came from, but they seemed just to be there to add fear and menace to the show, which, again, was something that I didn't like. There was a lot of hype, a lot of hysteria, and not to bring excitement to the show like you would get in Mythbusters. Mythbusters does the same thing, but it's designed to make it exciting. But this just seemed to pump the fear button, to raise anxiety. You were drawn into watching the show, but not for the love of discovery, or even the love of a good blast. Because if you didn't watch it, you might die. Because they went in there, and they provided some evidence. And what was the evidence? Well, they had one of the guys who said that it can move clouds. And they say the way that HAARP works is it heats up the atmosphere, and it can do all sorts of things like change the weather, shoot down planes, create seismic waves in the earth. One point where they say that the Indonesia Christmas typhoon was caused by a successful but misapplied HAARP experiment. In the one experiment, as I said, they did with a cloud chamber. Now, the cloud chamber, of course, uses dry ice. Not a lot of dry ice in our atmosphere, so not a very accurate representation, but again, it was designed to show that if you heated an atmosphere, you can move it, and that's true. And they said in there in dramatic, see what we did in this little cloud chamber. It was about 4 feet by 1 foot in diameter. Look, at 100 watts can do this to this little chamber. Could you imagine what HAARP does? And HAARP has a billion watts. Well, being skeptical by nature, I did a few calculations, and the HAARP apparatus is designed to work on the ionosphere. The ionosphere is 85 miles in the air. So a billion watts, the area that it would heat up, worked out to be less than a centimeter. Now let's pretend my math is off. Let's say my math is off by several factors. Well, let's say it could do an area of 85, 100 kilometers. That would have some effect, but it would have nowhere near the effect that they're claiming. Plus, if you heat up the air in northern Alaska, it is not going to make a significant difference to the Gulf Stream or Africa or many other things that they were hinting at would be the effect, but not quite saying. And that was another aspect about the show that I found misleading, is that they hinted that droughts in Africa were caused by HAARP. Flooding could be caused by HAARP. But they never actually provided any evidence, and they just kind of hinted at it. They did interviews with locals, and they made a big aspect about how the locals are afraid to talk. Or maybe they're not afraid. Maybe they just have nothing to say. They had one guy who did talk, and he said that he was in a bar, and he overheard some people talk about mind control. And one of the guys came over and talked to him about how they're doing all this mind control. So again, you sit back and you say, well, if it's such a big conspiracy, why are they talking about it? There was a lot of inconsistencies in the level of research that was done in the show. Another thing that came up was they went in there dramatically. They were wanted to. Jesse Ventura drove up to the front gates of HAARP to investigate the HAARP. He wanted to look at the facilities himself, as if he actually knows anything about electromagnetic experimental apparatus. But he drives up to this military experimental base, knocks on the door, and is surprised that they won't let him in. He says, "I'm Jesse Ventura. If you're trying to intimidate me, I don't get intimidated. I get angry." It was this over-the-top thing. And then, and hilariously, they said, "Well, you know, you can come in for a thing. We have regular tours. Just sign up for the tour." I mean, if it's such a cloak and dagger thing, such a mysterious thing, and they kept saying, "Ooh, what are they hiding? Are they hiding something? Ooh," it was just very, very inconsistent. It was worse than a waste of time. It only fed the conspiracy theories. Overall, Jesse Ventura's conspiracy theory is a crap show. Be wary of it, because you're going to hear your friends or friends of friends talking about how this show proved the conspiracy of the month or some other quack idea. Not a good show, not recommended. And I'm just giving you all a heads up so that you can be ahead of the curve. I'm ahead of the curve.
Take a piece of and thanks, Don, for that head of the curve piece. What do you guys think? Are you interested in going over to HARP in Alaska?
that was really amusing. Actually, like the entire time I was thinking, wow, this really reminds me of the Canadian mind control device from Kingdom of Loathing. I don't know if any of you have played that, but I'm sure someone who's listening has heard of it.
Maybe. Yes.
Was anyone actually expecting much from the show?
Well, I find it humorous that Jesse Ventura would show up and bang on the door. It's like, "Sir, tour's over there." Like, did he get to be like a wrestler or something? Or
governor of Minnesota? Or
do governors have access to top secret military facilities? I don't know.
If their government made it, I don't know.
Well, that was interesting. Well, why don't we go to a commercial break, and we'll be back with more on Radio Freethinker.
Want to know what's going on around town? LiveMusicVancouver.com is the Lower Mainland's comprehensive source for live music listings. We've got more than 350 shows listed at any time, and our listings are updated continuously by hundreds of the very people who put on the shows you love. Artist information and MP3s are accessible right from the listings, as are maps and calendars for virtually every venue in the city. All this and tons more totally free at LiveMusicVancouver.com.
And joining us now on Radio Free Thinker, we have the host of the popular podcast Skeptically Speaking, broadcast out of Edmonton, Miss Desiree Schell. Desiree, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Ethan. Thanks for having me.
And you're here to promote the Western Canada Skeptical Face-Off.
Absolutely.
What is that?
Actually, it was the brainchild of one of yours, Kennedy Goodkey, out of Vancouver. He's also a contributor to the Skeptic North blog, which I'm a part of. And I think he just thought that this would be a lovely idea, a chance for the different skeptical groups to interact and have some fun and answer some random, obscure questions about skepticism.
Excellent. And so this is a pub quiz, and for our Vancouver listeners, it's happening, as always, at the Railway Club at 7:30, January 12th, that is. And in Edmonton, where is this going down?
This will be at the Black Dog, specifically at the Underdog, which is the basement. Same time, same place, but if you're by any chance listening to this from Edmonton, it's at 8:30.
Right. Technically happening at the same time, but different time zones are in play. Edmonton being further east of Vancouver. All of our listeners who are aware of the time zones will be aware of that. Well, it's going to be quite an excellent event. There'll be some communication going back and forth. I assume there'll be some good-natured, skeptical trash
smack
talk going
yes,
back and forth.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. We're actually going to be Skyping during rounds, or sorry, between rounds. So I have some choice Vancouver bashing already stored in my head, so please do listen in.
Excellent. Well, I encourage our listeners to check that out and to take part. And Desiree, thanks for stopping by to promote this event.
Oh, no, absolutely, Ethan. Thanks. You guys run a really great show.
Oh, thank you. And Skeptically Speaking, of course, is one of the best skeptical podcasts in Canada. Definitely in the top three.
Nicely put, sir.
And we're back on Radio Freethinker. So thanks, Desiree, for stopping by to help drum up some good nature competitiveness.
We're going to kick your ass.
We need to get our Edmonton jokes out. Anyone have any ideas?
The Oilers suck.
Yep, we're done.
That's what I got to say. Well,
it's very cold there.
You don't have any oceans.
And you're above Calgary.
What are you going to do?
You guys don't like evolution in Edmonton. I don't think they like evolution there, do they? Bill 44.
Yeah, there was that whole thing. Whatever happened to that, actually?
I don't know. We should ask her about that. And then laugh at them because they don't have...
If anyone knows, they should email us.
Yes.
At radio.freethinker@gmail.com.
That's right.
We also have the show notes for the shows. We're going to try and keep those regularly updated. Actually, we've been working on a little something. Radiofreethinker.wordpress.com.
That's right. We're expanding and upgrading and revamping some things on the website. So
we're basically consolidating the show notes and the blogs specific to skepticism on the show that we do into one place. So you can look at it there and we'll have links and stuff.
That's going to be very good. So I recommend our listeners check that out. And, we're kind of heading towards the end here. Do we have any interesting skeptical events that we should promote?
Interesting skeptical events. I mean, we have, obviously, the...
pub quiz on the 12th.
When's Café Scientifique?
You know, I think Café Scientifique is on a bit of a hiatus, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't looked into that for a while.
I haven't heard anything from them in a while. They should be coming up.
Although there is an event coming up that I think our listeners would be quite interested in. It's called The World at Night. And it's an exhibit that's happening right here at UBC at the Irving K. Berber Learning Center. And it takes place, it's starting on Monday to Thursday this week. Also Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Monday to Thursday is 8 a.m. to 10 p.m. Friday is 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. And Saturday is 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Sunday, 12 noon to 8 p.m. So different times, check it out. It's going to be quite interesting. The World at Night is a program to create and exhibit a collection of stunning photographs and time-lapse videos of the world's most beautiful and historic sites against a night sky backdrop of stars, planets, and celestial events. And if you are interested in going with some good skeptical people, the Skeptics in the Pub group is actually going to be there Friday the 8th around 7 p.m. Check out the event and then head over to the local pub for some drinks and skeptical discussion. So definitely check that out.
I'm glad you prepared something on that because I remembered it as soon as you mentioned it and I didn't know what to say about it.
Yeah, well, it's definitely going to be pretty interesting. I think that, and it's local here at UBC, so our listeners who actually live on UBC or take classes here shouldn't have too much trouble making their way down to the library to check that out.
Do you know where in the library it is?
It just says Irving K. I assume it'll be a sign up or something.
They usually have signs.
Signs are good.
Look it up on the internet. I know that it was mentioned on Facebook. So.
Yeah, if you're a member of the Skeptics in the Pub Facebook group, you probably got a message from Fred about this event. So definitely, you know, at least try to attend. Try. I know it's cold, but we can do it. Well, so our time is slowly draining away.
Any news stories anyone read recently?
Bring up? We're planning in future episodes or a future episode to
That's right.
have an Olympic-themed episode. And if anyone has any suggestions for what we should talk about, any interesting articles, anything like that they found about the Olympics or sort of related issues, feel free to send it to us.
Yeah, things like civil liberties surrounding the Olympics, anti-Olympic sentiment.
Mm-hmm. The effects sentiment.
Yeah, that's good too. The effects of the Olympics on local communities.
Everything from like economic effects to is Vancouver becoming a mini police state? Those kind of things.
Yeah. We're planning maybe a special guest for that show. And we have very, very special guests for our next episode.
Yes. So speaking of, you know, the whole anti-vax movement, we're actually going to have two doctors on our show next week for a discussion about vaccine safety. We'll have Dr. Rob Tarswell, who gave a talk here at UBC a month or so ago about vaccine safety. We'll also have Dr. Chris Shaw, who was the quoted expert in a Georgia Strait article called What's in Your H1N1 Vaccine? An article that we were actually very critical of. So I'm looking forward to having both Dr. Tarswell and Dr. Shaw here to discuss this really interesting event. We encourage you, if you have any questions, emails, please send them in, and we'll make sure they get to our experts for them to answer for you. Remember that email address is radio.freethinker@gmail.com. Any other heads up that we have to give?
For that episode, we might be trying to get it a little longer than usual.
Yeah, so we'll try and convince Bryce White after this show.
So pay attention to our website or something. We might be starting early. I mean, if you podcast it, it doesn't matter, but...
Yeah.
If you're listening live, you are awesome.
Yes, you are.
If you're listening not live, you're awesome too.
Exactly. In fact, if you are listening, you just tuned in, you don't know what the heck this is, you're waiting for sports to come on, then you might want to go to iTunes and give a search on iTunes, find our show, subscribe, write a nice review of the show since you like it so much.
And, that's Radio Free Thinker.
Radio Free Thinker. And you can find us on iTunes, or if you don't like iTunes and you hate Apple, go to citr.ca. You'll be able to find the podcast feed right there as well.
So I think we've rambled on with nothing prepared for enough time now.
Shut up, Rob.
I've said too much.